The next case this morning is number 022323, United States against Charles L. Bolton. Mr. Flynn.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Mr. Nelson. I represent Charles Bolton in the underlying case in the district court, and I represent him here today on appeal. This is a very straightforward case, which concerns the application of a guideline enhancement on some very basic facts, which essentially were gleaned from a statement Mr. Bolton provided to the ATF when questioned prior to his arrest. And the judge, in making his finding and in applying the 4 points, I think blurred one of the two considerations. One was the initial consideration the government raised in its brief before sentencing, United States v. Jemison, in which it asked that the court apply the 4-point enhancement because Mr. Bolton knew that Mr. Cleveland was a drug dealer. And in the Jemison case coming out of Rockford, Illinois, where guns were supplied to the gangster disciples, this court held that the gangster disciples are so notorious as drug traffickers, among other things, that that in and of itself was enough to put a person on notice that this gun is going to be used in connection with another felony. What was raised below is that this is a far cry from the gangster disciples. The gangster disciples are a notorious street gang here in Chicago. Their very existence is predicated around nothing but criminality, and they have a widespread reputation for violence and drug trafficking, among other things, as well as a political arm in the neighborhood. If you look at Mr. Bolton's statement, the initial thing he says is in regards to the Ruger 9mm pistol. I purchased this pistol for a former friend of mine. The first thing he says is he purchased it for a friend. All the cases cited by the government, Patterson, Cantero, involved sort of, if I may characterize, wholesale drug trafficking operations. In one case, 1,500 pounds of marijuana. In another case, the least amount, I think, in the Haynes case is 3 pounds of marijuana.
Sure, but let me ask you this. I mean, I recognize that there can be different scales of operation, but it appears from Mr. Bolton's statement that he, on more than one occasion, had purchased marijuana from Shoki. He owes him money for a prior purchase. He comes back to him. And so why isn't that enough to allow the district court to come to the factual conclusion that Shoki Cleveland is, in fact, a marijuana dealer, and that if you buy a gun and give it to a marijuana dealer, then in the future, it's likely to be used in the drug trade.
Well,
not in the past, necessarily. In other words, what I'm trying to do is separate out whether this later purchased gun had anything to do with the earlier marijuana transaction that the debt arose from. I understand your argument about incidental there, and suppose you're right, but we have all sorts of language and opinions that suggest that guns and the drug trade go together, typically, and if you furnish a gun to a drug dealer, you are, in fact, doing enough to allow this adjustment to occur.
Because I think what the government proposes here, Your Honor, is painting with much too broad a stroke. If this court holds that, you will, in effect, hold it as a strict liability standard, because the argument can be further extended that any time you purchase a gun for somebody,
for somebody you know to be a drug dealer, that's what I'm trying to restrict it to.
Okay, well, if you want to restrict it, fine, then I'll maybe use some of my rebuttal to extend it, but
sorry.
Because you can transfer marijuana, anyone who transfers marijuana to another person, be it one time, two times, three times, in this case, the total amount of debt is $600 that he claims he ever had. That is a small personal use amount. The most I've ever seen in my experience as a public defender on very high grade Centimia is about $300 or $400. I've seen it as little as $100 an ounce, so somewhere in the ounce category, we can assume anywhere between one, say 6 to 2 or 3 ounces of marijuana. That does not necessarily mean the person is an evil, felonious, ongoing user of guns in his drug dealing operation. I think there is a distinction between marijuana and wholesale trafficking in cocaine and heroin and the violence that often associates that. A person could be a college acquaintance and have a better source for marijuana than another, for instance, and be in the habit of going and buying a quarter pound of it and breaking down among friends, and there can be no violence at all.
You're getting dangerously close to the real world, Mr.
Well, all I'm saying is that I think the government asks this court to paint a very broad stroke. And when we start doing that, then in effect you are going to hold it the strict liability standard. Because any time someone comes to you and says, hey, I don't want to go through the normal channels, I can't go through the normal channels, you can conceive of a scenario in which that gun is going to be used for something felonious. And there's nothing here to show that he knew the state of mind of Shoki Cleveland. There's nothing here, any evidence whatsoever that Shoki Cleveland ever showed up at a drug transaction with a gun, stored guns in connection with his drug. And the government could have done some of that work. They never even bothered to find out if Shoki Cleveland actually ever was committed to a mental institution. I know what he said, and Bolton relayed that to the government, but the simple fact that he was committed, people who have shot themselves are routinely taken to the Milwaukee County Mental Health Complex. It does not mean that they were committed to it. And that sort of, this sort of loose factual interpretation, you're asked to infer things that are, simply are not there in the record. Particularly disturbing is the contention, and the judge's actual holding was that it was a close call, but the additional fact that Shoki was Cleveland was a prohibited person, if I understand his rationale correctly, sort of triggered and threw it over the balance. But that's using the same transaction, the same firearm, sold to the same person on the same date as another felonious conduct.
Well, can another gun offense like that be used for the other felony offense under 2K2.1?
I believe that this court's holding in the SACA, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, case prohibits that. That essentially it is the same offense. The same offense, I think, than the SACA's case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to belabor the point. I think it's a very simple point we're asking this court to hold. I think the government goes way far afield, and I think you're drawing a very dangerous line if you apply any time. We paint this, what is a drug dealer? Anyone who has ever handed drugs to another person is a drug dealer. That's a distribution of marijuana.
They could certainly be indicted for it, couldn't they?
Could be indicted, and in fact, in Wisconsin, routinely people who hand marijuana cigarettes, that is a distribution. And I ask the court to draw the line more narrowly. I think you're very perilously close to making this a strict liability standard, and the 4 points will be very easily added in any case in which a firearm is transferred. I'd like to reserve some time for
Thank you, Mr. Flynn. We'll hear now from Mr. Phillips. Now, Mr. Phillips, reading the briefs in this case, I somewhat at a loss as to exactly what the government's principal theory here is, and certainly what the district court's principal theory was as to why this guideline applies. Can you help me out?
Certainly. When the government and the in pretrial services recommended this guideline be applied, the principal theory was, and I argue still is, that when Mr. Bolton transferred this gun to Mr. Cleveland, that gun was, Mr. Bolton did in fact know Mr. Cleveland was a drug dealer and thus had reason to believe. He was paying for drugs. That was in satisfaction of a previous drug debt.
Now, I guess my puzzlement when I picked up the transcript and read what the district court had to say about all this is, why do we get involved in this whole issue as to whether or not the defendant knew that the person who had sold him the drugs and for whom he was procuring the weapon, that this person was a prohibited person? Why is that so important?
You know, I argue that I'll posit that it's not incredibly important in the sense that the government posited back to the district court as an alternative argument. I'll concede it was a secondary argument. And I think that it may be a close question as far as that's concerned. I think the district court found that the statements that Mr. Cleveland made to Mr. Bolton provided a nexus between the gun and the drugs, and based his decision upon that.
Now we have this, if I may just follow up on the thought, we have this rather puzzled paragraph, really, from the district court. He says, now in this case, we do not have the simultaneous transfer of the marijuana in exchange for the weapon, but it is clear from the information provided in the pre-sentence report as well as the objection that was the end game. I read that far, and I thought, well, okay, he's district court saying the weapon was part of the transaction. And we have semicolon. Of course, can't blame the district court for the semicolon. That's the court reporter. That is, Mr. Cleveland could not lawfully obtain a firearm. That is, I mean, what did the district court find here? Did he find out that there was a bartering with use of the weapon in a drug transaction? Or was he worrying about whether Mr. The other fellow's name, whether he was Cleveland, whether Mr. Cleveland was a prohibited person? What's the basis of his ruling?
I think that the district court found, first of all, that there was a drug transaction and that this gun was transferred in satisfaction of drugs, marijuana specifically, that were previously given to Mr. Bolden. That at the moment he transferred that gun, that the transaction had then been completed. I think that's why he cites the Smith case. Further, there was a statement from Mr. Cleveland to Mr. Bolden indicating that he may be a prohibited person in the sense that he believes he was committed to a mental institution, showed Mr. Bolden the scar in his stomach, and thus Mr. Bolden relied on Mr. Cleveland, who indicated that, yes, you're a prohibited person, thus I will go out and buy a gun for you. And
there's no evidence regarding the accuracy of Bolton's belief that Cleveland was a prohibited person. I want to ask you something. Would your argument be the same if Bolton owed Cleveland money for some debt other than drugs? In other words, what is the important factor here? That the gun was used to pay for drugs, or that the gun was given to a drug dealer?
I'm sorry, the first part of your question again is...
It's really, is it a retrospective or a prospective concern? If it was because the gun was used to pay for drugs,
sure,
as opposed to pay him for his old laptop or something, then that's one possibility.
Sure.
If it's because we know that Cleveland's a drug dealer and thus in the future he will have a gun to assist him in his future drug dealings, that's just a different case. What's your theory?
I don't think there's a question that the fact that Mr. Cleveland is a drug dealer is the strongest argument here. I think that's the thing that glares most brightly in this case, or on these facts. The fact that Mr. Bolden had bought drugs multiple times previously from Mr. Cleveland put Mr. Bolden on notice that he, by transferring this gun to Mr. Cleveland, is putting a gun possibly into the drug trafficking arena.
Well, is there any question as to whether or not the defendant here, Bolton, was in debt to Cleveland at the time for a drug deal?
Outside of Mr. Bolton's own admission?
Well, my point is, why isn't that a stronger argument? I mean, if he's paying off a drug debt,
certainly,
that's the end of the case, right?
It can be interpreted as such, yes. I think that the court has many options in this case. I think that
you had some options, and we're trying to figure out which ones did you exercise in the district court and which ones did the district court buy. Or do we have to send this back and have the district court tell us?
My argument to the district court was two things, that he transferred the gun to a drug dealer and thus knew under the Jemison case that this gun could be used in connection with further felonies. And secondly, I posited the 922 subdivisio 4 argument under Title 18 United States Code, which indicates that the gun was transferred to a prohibited person. Now, I admit that there's nothing on the record indicating that Mr. Cleveland had been committed to a mental institution. And I think that the record is, well, it's absent from the record as far as any further evidence on that in that particular respect.
See, if you do something you think is illegal, but it isn't, there's no crime.
I'm not arguing with the court on that matter. I think that the district court found that this gun was, after argument from the parties, that this gun was transferred in connection with or during in relation to a drug trafficking offense. When the government cited Smith in its original brief, the intent was to distinguish, not distinguish, but to actually bring up the similarities in the in connection with language in 2K2.5 sub sub 1 to the during and in relation to language in 924C1.
Now, what's the evidence in the record that ties the gun to Cleveland's drug dealing?
It's the reason to believe, as far as the reason to believe in the 2K2.1 sub sub 5 sentencing guideline. The fact that Mr. Cleveland is a drug dealer and you're giving a gun to a drug dealer, you have reason to believe, or an individual has reason to believe, in this case Mr. Bolton, that that gun will likely be used in further drug trafficking.
Well, see, and that's the future-oriented thing that I'm concerned with, because suppose this marijuana debt that Mr. Bolton referred to had been incurred 3 months earlier. You know, Mr. Cleveland gives him, you know, a joint or, you know, an ounce or whatever he gives him, and there's an agreement that there's now a debt, and they'll pay you later. And every week they meet, and they'll pay you later, I'll pay you later. And eventually, Mr. Bolton says, you know, A, here I can give you this gun in satisfaction of the debt, or he says, B, you know, here's some cash, or he says, C, I can't give you cash right now, but I can give you my Rolex watch, you know, or whatever. I mean, at that point, the fact that you might choose A, the gun, is pretty incidental. The gun wasn't part of the original deal, and I think that was what Mr. Flynn was arguing in part in his brief, that in the other cases that talk about bartering with guns, it's an immediate part of the transaction, whereas here the gun just happens to be a thing of value in the future. So if Mr. Cleveland said, the minute I get this gun, you know, I'm going to leave and go live in Tahiti for the rest of my life, you know, and so there was no future element to this, maybe there's not a problem.
I think the circumstance is slightly different. It wasn't Mr. Bolton who posited the request for the gun. It was Mr. Cleveland, the drug dealer. Mr. Cleveland says, I need a gun. I will forgive $200 of your marijuana debt. I think that puts the situation in a much more precarious light because Mr. Bolton is on notice that his drug dealer needs a gun. And secondly, I don't believe that Mr. Bolton has to know specifically what's on Mr. Cleveland's mind. All he has to know is that he's a drug dealer and that the possibility exists that Mr. Cleveland could use this in further drug dealing, in either emboldening himself or possibly strengthening his status as a drug dealer in the city of Milwaukee. There's no evidence that, as Mr. Flynn argued, that Mr. Cleveland is a gangster disciple. But I don't think that takes away from this argument at all. Drug dealing obviously has a modicum of violence to it, and everyone knows it. Possibly even the reputation might even supersede that of the gangster disciples, those who don't know much about gangs. But I think that when someone gives a gun to a drug dealer, he's put on notice, and the application of that guideline applies without question. If there are no further questions of me, I'll go back to my table.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Your Honor. And just briefly, the entire factual basis the government predicates its argument on is the statement of Shoki Cleveland. There were other statements made, in fact, in terms of the drug treatment he was trying to get out of using drugs, and ironically, his statement was used to enhance his base offense level because he himself was a prohibited person as being a marijuana addict. So, but there's no question that if we rely on the factual basis provided the statement of Mr. Bolton, this gun was not swapped for drugs. It did not facilitate the drug sale. The drug sale had already been completed. It was not during and in relationship to the drug sale.
Well, the drugs had been paid for. The transaction wasn't complete.
Well, but when the drugs were initially sold, it was fronted to him as is common in the business. You owe me money.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no mention of a gun at that point. There was nothing about the gun that facilitated it was during and in relation to the drug transaction. It was simply a fronting of drugs, you owe me money. In fact, the dollar value, this may have been Jokey Cleveland's clever way of increasing his percentage, because Mr. Bolton paid $329 for the pistol. He got $200 forgiven of a prior drug debt and an additional $50. So one could argue the $50 was by the same, was what was exchanged for the gun. The gun and the drugs were never discussed in the same transaction. The United States Supreme Court in the Smith decision held that it has to be during in a relation. There's nothing about during here. It was a prior transaction, and it was used partially to forgive a debt. And that's the point I just wanted to make clear here, that this was not, and it's important, I think, the timing. It's one thing, as in Smith, to actually trade money, and in that case, I believe it was an automatic weapon, for a gun. That's part of the purchase. That's contemplated. It facilitates the sale of the drugs. Nothing here about that gun. The drug transaction was over. No discussion of guns was ever made. The drug transaction had taken place. And that's the point I wanted to clarify. If there's any more questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flynn and Mr. Phillips. The case will be taken under advisement.